3. Harry Seldon surveyed the comfortable suite that had been his personal office at the Galactic Library these past few years. It, like the rest of the library, had a vague air of decay about it, a kind of weariness, something that had been too long in one place. And yet Seldon knew it might remain here, in the same place, for centuries more, with judicious rebuildings, for millennia even. How did he come to be here? Over and over again he felt the past in his mind, ran his mental tendrils along the line of development of his life. It was part of growing older, no doubt. There was so much more in the past, so much less in the future, that the mind turned away from the looming shadow ahead to contemplate the safety of what had gone before. In his case, though, there was that change. For over 30 years, psychohistory had developed in what might almost be considered a straight line, progress creepingly slow but moving straight ahead. Then, 6 years ago, there had been a right-angled turn, totally unexpected. And Seldon knew exactly how it had happened, how a concatenation of events came together to make it possible. It was Wanda, of course, Seldon's granddaughter. Harry closed his eyes and settled into his chair to review the events of 6 years before. 12-year-old Wanda was bereft. Her mother, Manella, had had another child, another little girl, Bellis, and for a time the new baby was a total preoccupation. Her father, Rach, having finished his book on his home sector of Dahl, found it to be a minor success and himself a minor celebrity. He was called upon to talk on the subject, something he accepted with alacrity, for he was fiercely absorbed in the subject and, as he said to Harry with a grin, "When I talk about Dahl, I don't have to hide my Dahlite accent. In fact, the public expects it of me." The net result, though, was that he was away from home a considerable amount of time, and when he wasn't, it was the baby he wanted to see. As for Dawes, Dawes was gone. And to Harry Seldon, that wound was ever fresh, ever painful. And he had reacted to it in an unfortunate manner. It had been Wanda's dream that had set in motion the current of events that had ended with the loss of Dawes. Wanda had had nothing to do with it. Seldon knew that very well. And yet he found himself shrinking from her, so that he also failed her in the crisis brought about by the birth of the new baby. And Wanda wandered disconsolately to the one person who always seemed glad to see her, the one person she could always count on. That was Hugo Amaril, second only to Harry Seldon in the development of psychohistory, and first in his absolute round-the-clock devotion to it. Harry had had Dawes and Rach, but psychohistory was Hugo's life. He had no wife and children. Yet whenever Wanda came into his presence, something within him recognized her as a child, and he dimly felt, for just that moment, a sense of loss that seemed to be assuaged only by showing the child affection. To be sure, he tended to treat her as a rather undersized adult, but Wanda seemed to like that. It was 6 years ago that she had wandered into Hugo's office. Hugo looked up at her with his owlish, reconstituted eyes and, as usual, took a moment or two to recognize her. Then he said, "Why, it's my dear friend Wanda. But why do you look so sad? Surely an attractive young woman like you should never feel sad." And Wanda, her lower lip trembling, said, "Nobody loves me." "Oh, come, that's not true. They just love that new baby. They don't care about me anymore." "I love you, Wanda." "Well, you're the only one then, Uncle Hugo." And even though she could no longer crawl onto his lap as she had when she was younger, she cradled her head on his shoulder and wept. Amaril, totally unaware of what he should do, could only hug the girl and say, "Don't cry, don't cry." And out of sheer sympathy, and because he had so little in his own life to weep about, he found that tears were trickling down his own cheeks as well. And then he said with sudden energy, "Wanda, would you like to see something pretty?"
"What?"
sniffled Wanda. Amaril knew only one thing in life and the universe that was pretty. He said, "Did you ever see the Prime Radiant?"
"No. What is it?"
It's what your grandfather and I used to do our work. See? It's right here. He pointed to the black cube on his desk, and Wanda looked at it woefully. That's not pretty, she said. Not now, agreed Amaryl. But watch when I turn it on. He did so. The room darkened and filled with dots of light and flashes of different colors. See? Now we can magnify it so all the dots become mathematical symbols. And so they did. There seemed a rush of material toward them, and there in the air were signs of all sorts, letters, numbers, arrows, and shapes that Wanda had never seen before. Isn't it pretty? Asked Amaryl. Yes, it is, said Wanda, staring carefully at the equations that, she didn't know, represented possible futures. I don't like that part, though. I think it's wrong. She pointed at a colorful equation to her left. Wrong? Why do you say it's wrong? Said Amaryl, frowning. Because it's not pretty. I'd do it a different way. Amaryl cleared his throat. Well, I'll try to fix it up. And he moved closer to the equation in question, staring at it in his owlish fashion. Wanda said, Thank you very much, Uncle Hugo, for showing me your pretty lights. Maybe someday I'll understand what they mean. That's all right, said Amaryl. I hope you feel better. A little, thanks. And after flashing the briefest of smiles, she left the room. Amaryl stood there, feeling a trifle hurt. He didn't like having the Prime Radiance product criticized, not even by a 12-year-old girl who knew no better. And as he stood there, he had no idea whatsoever that the psychohistorical revolution had begun.